Warm welcome again. My name is Uli Hohmann. I'm the Chief Architect for the Worldwide Consulting or Enterprise Service Organization at Microsoft. And I'm here to talk to you about data center applications and how you integrate those into the private cloud environment that most of you are either looking at, investing at, or have already investing in. And you're now wondering what comes after a virtual machine. How do you think about SharePoint, Exchange, Link, for example, as very traditional workloads that all of our customers are looking at integrating into their private cloud? I'm not going to do many demos or any demos, actually, because provisioning of servers or virtual machine is like watching grass grow. It's very, very boring. Trust me that it actually works, and I'll show you some screenshots what it looks like and what the artifacts are. But we're not going to go demos and clicking and here's System Center, VMM, and orchestrators because, A, there are lots of sessions where you can see all that, and I assume that you have some experience with tools like System Center or equivalent from other parties. So if you're expecting lots of demos, sorry to disappoint you, but that's not going to be part of the discussion. We will focus much more on architecture and a certain set of constraints that we are currently designing, and so you still have time to provide some input in order to make this work. Because cloud computing, private cloud or public cloud, is a story of making choices and standardizing things. And without standardization, it actually really doesn't work. So what are we talking about? If you think about a typical life cycle of what you've got to think about when you are looking at any solution, be it SharePoint, be it SAP, Oracle, CRM, it doesn't really matter, that you want to deploy, you have to think about a design, you have to stand it up, you have to keep it running, and you have to, of course, use it well or effectively drive a value realization for your company. There come decisions that you have to make, configuration versus customization. So how do you think about the solution? How much do you want to customize versus how do you want to configure the product and just use the capabilities as they are? And that also depends, aligns with the System Center integration, the same kind of choices you have to make. What are the opportunities to go with the product capabilities versus driving extensions? Some of you might be scripters. If you are, Unix people are very much into scripting. PowerShell is the Unix candy for the Windows guys. You can do anything with PowerShell. So when I talk about configuration versus customization, I'm also talking about how do you make decisions between scripting in PowerShell and using products like Virtual Machine Manager, Ops Manager, and other things, and how you combine those two. Solution integration, admin and services, upgrades, and so forth. And then the last but not least, feature adoption and usage is not something we're going to talk about here, but this is something that you have to do, and you have to do it for all workloads in your data center. And all workloads in your data center today operate and behave differently. SharePoint has a different philosophy than Exchange. Exchange has a different philosophy than Link. And if you put SAP in there, they look like aliens compared to those three. So effectively, you have to always put your mind as an infrastructure data center person and saying, how do I start talking to these workload people? And what is the language that we both could adopt to effectively say, here's my infrastructure capability, here's my management capability, how do you plan and think about integrating into this environment? So the way we are trying to graphically depict it is you are working on your private cloud, and it's all beautiful, meaning it's usage-based, it's self-service-based, scalable and elastic, blah, 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 all that good stuff that we have been telling you since a long time, and that Hyper-V and System Center are making possible. They make it possible, though, today, mostly on VMs. I've yet to see a very big customer, and again, I travel the globe, that's my privilege and my job, and I talk to customers, and the first thing they talk to me is, yep, we're doing infrastructure as a service, and we got this VM self-service thing figured out. Yep, true. That works. Now, the next thing is, you're looking at these guys, and I've just depicted our workloads here, SharePoint, Exchange, and Link as samples. And you're looking at this saying, okay, how does this get to land on here? When you look at Office 365 as our service offering, Office 365 actually doesn't use virtualization today. Why? Because they're at such a scale that they really don't care about a hypervisor making life easier for them. If you're provisioning 150 million mailboxes, don't bother with this private cloud thing because it really doesn't help, because you are a cloud in itself. I don't know how many servers Exchange has running or SharePoint, but that's effectively a cloud in itself. So virtualization, private cloudness doesn't really add anything. They are doing a lot of self-service and there are a lot of optimizations and automation that they're driving, but they don't have a private cloud and system center integration in terms of the artifacts that you would use. They have artifacts and they use system center parts, but they're doing it at such a scale that we can't take it and just give it to you and saying, yep, here's part of the product. And so part of what we are looking at is how do we map what we have here to this environment? And again, the product teams are working on improving this and are adding things. So we have just updated virtualization guidance, which is the first step to really improve the way these products, specifically our friend Exchange, runs on top of a virtualized environment. So if you're not familiar with it, I can send the link via the tech ed people to you guys in terms of where you can find the virtualization guidance. But before we go there, I want to talk a little bit about where we are. And again, I'm a services person, so I'm as guilty as the product people, but I'm not a product person. But at the end of the day, we have lots of people who know what to do, but it depends who you ask. Or it depends which TechNet article you find in terms of what is it that the guidance that you're getting in terms of do this, do that, or the other. I talked to one customer, he said, yeah, what we do is we print out everything we can find, and then we are sifting through what might be the right guidance because some of the guidance might conflict with each other and stuff like that. So again, no evil intent, it's just people producing stuff and not necessarily being as coordinated as they ought to be. So we really have islands of best practice. That is certainly something that we intend to fix, but it's certainly not easy. Public cloud compatibility. Lots of people are now asking to think about when you deploy in your data center, don't lock me into on-premise. I want to be able, if necessary, to move to, for example, Office 365 or Windows Azure so that I can effectively achieve mobility, bursting, or drive down costs, enable new scenarios. I talked to a very big retailer in the US who wanted to expand to China, and he didn't want to build up IT in China. He had no presence, and so he wanted to use public cloud infrastructure, but take, in that example, the commerce solution that they built on private cloud and move that into the public cloud. So there's a lot of these kind of scenarios where constraints are actually put on you in your private cloud scenario to drive public cloud compatibility. The other thing that we are seeing a lot of businesses driving hard is time to market. It doesn't really help if it takes N months for the data center and the solution people to come together, design the solution, and bring it into the data center. People want effectively in days, weeks, they want to give a new capability, be it SharePoint, Exchange, or SAP, up and running so that they can start gain value out of the solution. And of course, drive down complexity and cost so that it becomes really cheap and easy to do these kind of things, enable capability. And at the end of the day, all of this is very well known to you, and now you're kind of wondering, okay, how do we do this? What's going on? But before we go and talk about the approach, I want to give you some graphicals, reminders, so maybe some slides that you can also take away. So currently, the way most people approach the deployment of these solutions is like a dinner where you would be invited into the kitchen and say, I would like these ingredients and I would like them this way, and everybody can do whatever they want. How many of you are application people and how many of you are data center people? Meaning, are you responsible for the infrastructure or the apps? Because generally I find people being either or, not and. Infrastructure. Anybody from the app side? Okay. So you are generally this, and the infrastructure people are saying, wait a second. I have already a standardized environment, and please help me understand how I get there. Now, you will say, what the heck is he doing here? How do we get from a refrigerator to the data center? The reason why I'm bringing this to you is a story that Microsoft, because we started early in the data center business, so Hotmail as a very large cloud service has been running since 95. And we have run build data centers, but we really didn't focus on it until 2004-ish. And the first real data center that we built was a very traditional build. I don't know if you've ever seen Dublin. If you're not, talk to your Microsoft account managers and really go and see Microsoft Dublin. We do offer tours in the data center and so forth. It's very fascinating how we did that thing. But It is very interesting. If you come to Redmond, there's a little place called Quincy, which is 3 hours outside of Redmond. And Google is there, we are there, Amazon is there. Everybody's there because there is a dam and there is a power grid that is providing very, very cheap power to this stuff. But at the end of the day, we built a traditional data center, which means we built it custom. We had a very large CapEx. And we were talking to every individual provider, going back to the refrigerator, like this, and saying, oh, yeah, you could do it this way, that way, and so forth. So lots and lots of money, and all of it up front. Until we actually could use it, we had to pay a heck of a lot of money. That's generally true for a data center application being deployed. Until it's up and running, you have a lot of costs that are being incurred, consultant costs, your own costs, et cetera, et cetera. If you think about the latest generation data center, we actually are not building data centers anymore in the traditional sense. You will not find a big building. We actually are finding a building more of a shed-like thing, where in the middle, actually, you will have an internet access, and we will park containers at the back of this internet access, and we have power, water, and effectively networking. And the key thing is actually not that we have containers running in. The key thing is that we standardized the heck out of the system. We standardize how we build it, how we compose it, and what the parts are. So we're not talking to each individual vendor anymore and saying, for Dublin, we want to do it this way. For Chicago, we wanted to do it this way. We actually said, no. Wait. Our data centers are composed out of modules, and these modules ideally are standardized, and that we can buy off the shelf $250 instead of $2,500, so that we can effectively drive down the cost and modularize it at the same time. So at the end of the day, what we are trying to do with our data center applications is going from custom, very, very special design to a supply chain-oriented, very, very cheap manufactured design. And that has some consequences, because in the custom environment, you can do whatever you want. In the pre-built modular environment, you can't necessarily do what you want. But there are benefits to it, and primarily those are cost and time. And again, that's a choice you have to make when you're thinking about data center applications in the context of what we are going to propose to you. The goal is to get to predictability and simplicity from extreme standardization. And I mean extreme standardization. In our data centers today, you will find effectively a computer with storage and a computer without storage. That's it. There are two types, and the computer itself is very much the same as the one between the two environments. The one has direct attached terabytes of storage. I don't know how many currently. 3 was the original one, and I think we're now up to 5 terabytes per server. And the other one just has an SSD environment for caching purposes. That's it. And we don't do, I would like it this way or that way. You get a choice of this or that, and how much do you want in terms of composition. We have multiple vendors, so Dell and HP and all sorts of things, but they work against the same spec. If you want to buy the Microsoft server, which is also right-sized and has a different architecture in terms of what's in it, it's still Intel-based and all this other stuff, Dell actually has a SKU where you can buy the Microsoft server, if you wanted it to. We buy it in hundreds of thousands of units. That's why it's very cheap for us. Might not be quite as cheap for you because it all depends on the volume. But maybe you need 100,000 servers as well. Maybe we can join you. A joint supply program. That would be cool. So what are we trying to get done? We're trying to decrease the time to value, build capabilities for predictably and mature services, et cetera, et cetera. We need a rationalized architecture foundation. We need a tunable configuration, automated deployment and scale, and simplified operation. And first of all, we need operations because a lot of customers are still working towards a more mature operations base, although Europe is further ahead than the American people. So what are we doing? At the bottom of the architecture is a product line architecture. I will talk a lot about what that is, but think about a reference architecture that's configurable. So you can say for Exchange, SharePoint, and Link, you will get an architecture where the service design will be based upon Office 365, what capabilities that service offers, and it will drive the configuration of the server farm. So think about it that way. So that's the building block for what we are currently working on. Then we are building cloud packs, and cloud packs are the link between SharePoint, Exchange, or Link, and the System Center environment. So it effectively uses System Center, Orchestrator, PowerShell, VMM, to deploy and monitor and manage these various workloads. And the cloud packs will come in two settings. Three actually. One, you can get one for free. The VMM team has a gallery where they actually already have a SharePoint cloud pack, a very simplified one. We'll show you how it's done. Then Microsoft Services has a cloud pack which is based upon our experiences and is richer and also maintained. And then we will give you a blueprint of how you can build your own cloud packs. So if you have custom applications or you have Oracle or whatever you have, we effectively will tell you, here's what we did, here's the architecture of it, and you can do it yourself. Again, the goal is to build it for these three products first. We are also working on the Dynamics line. The first starts with product line architectures. I just reviewed the Dynamics CRM and AX product line architectures, and we are going to do cloud packs for those guys as well. And we are also integrating services like the RAP service from our Premier organization into this offering. RAP is effectively a health check that we run on a regular basis to see if your system still complies with the proven practices that we have seen across the world. So there are certain configurations that are possible but are not advisable. And so that's effectively what a RAP does. RAP as a service is a new offering that effectively runs on Azure and doesn't require a human being being deployed to your organization to run the RAP. You can do it yourself. You can schedule the running. You have to install an agent. It will collect data, run it through an analysis, and effectively come back to you and say, this is what we are going to find, and your SharePoint environment is following these rules. These are etchy, and these three you should change, because it most likely will lead to problems. And again, we are working on other RAPs as a service as part of this offering. And again, on top of this, we want to focus on solutions. So if you think about this stack here, so far I've really only configured capability. I've put it into the data center, I've integrated it into management, but I haven't done anything with it. So now services is starting to work on social solutions, e-discovery, and some other things of how you use the set of capabilities. So that effectively is the end-to-end stack of how we as Microsoft and consulting services are going to market in this data center. Now let me go deep into what the heck does that all mean and what am I getting if I buy one of those. Before I do that, I want to talk a little bit about the private cloud fast track. How many of you are aware of the fast track? Great. There is a session here, I don't know when it is, that talks more detail about the fast track. Think about fast track as Microsoft's answer to vBlock. I know that the Microsoft people that are listening right now is like, ooh, he mentioned the V word. But effectively, it's a pre-designed architecture of how you put hardware and the hypervisor software together in order to develop effectively a cloud in a box. And it's continuously evolving and certainly something that we are jointly working on with our OEMs. So you will get fast tracks from Fujitsu, Dell, HP, et cetera, et cetera. And fast track comes in these three design points. The first one is effectively a storage infrastructure that is driven by Which one do we have? So this is just the size. So this is 6 to 8, 8 to 16, 16 to 46. So this is the small configuration, the medium configuration, and the large configuration. So you can buy this set of configurations from the various OEMs. Some only offer this for now. Some are already offering this. And we are working on some people to give us the large configuration, which is effectively node clusters up to 64. Host clusters, which is something that some of our customers have expressed interest in. And we have three architectures that we support. Microsoft Services has a IIS PLA, which is a product line architecture for IIS, which effectively allows you to, or works you through how you design your fabric. So go back to this one. Here is the sizes and the various configuration options in that size factor. And here is your hardware architecture. Let's start on this one. Non-converged infrastructure pattern is traditional stuff, meaning you have storage people, you have network people, and compute people. And they are connected by wires, and that's about it. There is no common design per se, and there's not an integrated design. But a lot of people have invested a lot of money in that kind of thing. And so we support that as part of our IIS deployment. Then you have converged infrastructure patterns. These two are actually converged infrastructure patterns. The light green one is the hardware person. So you're buying Cisco UCS. That is a converged infrastructure where network, compute, and storage are getting closer and are being designed together. And you're seeing that from HP, from IBM, from everybody in the hardware business, where they're giving you solutions that are converged. As a private cloud provider, you might want to start thinking about that if you are still on this pattern. It's much cheaper and much more integrated from a management perspective. Microsoft has created a software-based converged hardware pattern, which we call continuously available over SMB storage patterns. I hope that you have seen a lot of the Windows storage announcements at Windows Server 2012 and the improvements in R2. So you now can effectively get a software-based SAN inside Windows Server with direct-attached disks, JBODs, etc. And you can get a software-defined network. On the hardware converged side, all of that is hidden in the hardware. Here it's exposed over very simple hardware. So the strategy for Microsoft is to support all three with an emphasis over time to go over here because the software-defined data center, which is really what this is all about, is becoming the next generation private cloud environment where we see a lot of potential. We are really realizing that potential already in our Windows Azure world, which is already completely software-based from a data center perspective. So we don't have load balancers anymore. We don't do SANs or any of this stuff in the Windows Azure world. We still have SANs, so if you visit our data center, you will still see SANs, but those are primarily for SharePoint currently and our SAP environment. So there's lots of SANs around. But generally, we're trying to move to a software-defined data center, and we are calling this pattern continuously available over SMB storage, if you see that somewhere. Now, we talked about the PLA, and I apologize, you can't really read it. But to continue the refrigerator and the kitchen scenario, this is for my English friends. Effectively, the PLA tells you that there are certain choices that you have, and you can pick the choices, and we can have a conversation along the way, but it's not like open the fridge and everything is possible. There are certain constraints and pre-designs in that dinner. Europeans are much more used to that. When you go into a fancy restaurant in Europe, you effectively don't tell the chef that you don't like this and move this away and so forth. You get what you kind of, you take what you get there. In the U.S., it's perfectly okay to ruin your a great dish by saying, nah, I don't like this, do this, and so forth. Again, the cloud kind of says, don't do that, and focus on what you can eat. So what is a PLA? A PLA is a reference architecture. All of you are familiar with those. You have seen those diagrams and pictures and so forth. The only issue with static reference architecture is that they are not telling you, not allowing you to enable and disable features. If you're an Exchange person, you will know what I'm talking about. An Exchange environment can change quite radically depending on what you turn on. If you don't have any Android clients, let's say, connecting to your Exchange environment, there is a certain set of server capability that you don't have to turn on. If you don't use archiving, it changes the Exchange Farm architecture quite dramatically. And if we say, okay, we would design a single reference architecture, we would effectively have to design all the features in, which would most likely lead to a very, very heavy Exchange environment, and you would say, nah, don't want that. But in this case, what you would get here is to say, okay, the Office 365 guys walk you through a solution alignment, which is what they call, and you pick the services you want. It's not freeform. You can't say, I don't like Exchange to do archiving. I would like it to be whatever solution you might want. But it is effectively a Chinese menu of choices you can make. Once you make the choices, the system will automatically generate the farm. That's effectively how it ends up doing. It might generate a farm, or it might generate a tenant, depending if you get dedicated or if you get shared, because it depends on how you look at it. But at the end of the day, the product line architecture is cloud-aligned, or cloud-derived is a better word. So we derive the architecture for Exchange SharePoint Link from our product teams that are operating in Office 365. And then we are giving you prescriptive guidance of what the solution services are and how that links to the reference architecture or the farm that you have to eventually deploy. And we're making it as easy as possible to implement. It's cost effective insofar as we don't give you a lot of choices that you have to discover. Meaning, if I do this, what are the impacts? You effectively get a set of capabilities, and we know exactly what the impact is. The only thing currently, you have to hire a blue-badged Microsoft consultant to get access to the PLA. We're working on making that easier through partners and other venues, but at this point in time, it's MCS know-how that we are providing as through human people. But we are going to make this available to partners and customers directly in the near future. I will work on getting more details for you guys. How do we derive these things? There are effectively two influence factors that we are looking at. One is, of course, the product team that owns the service, Office 365 in this example, or Dynamics in the CRM Online. And then we have a lot of best practices from our GFS friends. For example, scale units. All of our PLAs are based on scale units. If you have not heard about scale units, let me give you a 2 minute or 2 second example. If you do capacity planning in your data center, what you normally do is you know exactly how many users, or you kind of know what how many users, and you kind of know what they will do. So what you do is reading the capacity planning guidance and adding a couple of safety margins and your experience, you say, I need one of those. That is expensive, and in general, what we find is either too small or too big. Depending, it never really works out. Most of the time, it's over-provisioned, because you always over-provision to the maximum point in time that you will use this service. And it's always optimistic. Let's take a thing like Exchange or SharePoint. If you have 150,000 users in your environment, it will take time to ramp up the deployment before they actually will all be able to use the Exchange or SharePoint or whatever service. But if you deploy it in a normal way, all of these servers will already be used and be using compute power and so forth, because despite lots of marketing, Exchange is not elastic, neither is SharePoint or Link. So they're all very static, like all enterprise software today, because they were designed for a world where you didn't need elasticity. Or maybe you needed it, but you didn't know it. So everybody built these systems. Yep, I'm having my resources, and that's it. Try to take resources away from an SAP system. It will tell you that that's not a very good thing. It doesn't like it. So enterprise systems generally grab resources, and they stick with it. Scale units are effectively reversing the capacity planning approach to what we call capacity management. So you're designing instead of to an end goal, you're designing to a known capacity. You're saying, for Exchange, I have a design point of 5,000 email inboxes. And 5,000 message boxes with this kind of feature set will require this much resources. And the next 5,000 will require exactly the same, and exactly the same. And so you can dynamically or elastically deploy scale units into your data center. And with care, except for persistent storage, obviously, you can also take them away. Because on a larger time scale, these systems are elastic. You can remove resources from SharePoint or Exchange, but you can't do it instantly, and it doesn't do it automatically. You have to do stuff yourself. So scale units is one of the approaches we use to introduce elasticity into the PLA. And so all the PLAs are based upon scale units on the one side and resource agnostic designs. So if you read a lot of the capacity planning things, they will tell you, I need direct attached storage with these capabilities and this feature set and blah, blah, blah. So they're very specific about what they want. So you as an infrastructure person saying, ooh, I don't have one of those, I have this. Would that work? And then you have to have this conversation. And so I'm working in this environment to effectively neutralize the capacity planning guidance to drive, I need VM capability of this and virtual networking capability with these capabilities, performance, quality of service, and so forth. And Windows Server R2, 2012 R2, resolved one of my last issues, which was storage quads. I need that much IOPS from a given storage environment, and then I don't care anymore. So we now got updated Exchange guidance where they don't care about your storage architecture anymore. If you want to give them a NAS, that's okay, as long as you guarantee a certain set of things, meaning IOPS and stuff like that. So the PLAs are designed based upon a lot of learning from our cloud environment, both Office 365 or Windows Azure and our GFS guys, which own our data centers. What do you get? Effectively, a managed environment, a rule book that effectively says, here is the rules of how a certain set of things interact with each other. If you say Android, this is the effect. If you say, I have mailboxes that have, on average, 10 gigabyte attachments, then this is the effect. If you have SharePoint and you want to do e-discovery, here is what you got to turn on because you all of a sudden need search and you need all these other capabilities. So the rulebook effectively tells you, turning on a feature or a service, what the effect of that is. And again, one of the goals that we have is we currently are in a situation which is bad for both of us, meaning each deployment in each of your data centers is unique. They might be by chance very, very similar, but they're very much unique because it's you that designed it with some help or yourself. You read the documentation and you interpreted it and you implemented it. So we have very much no way understanding what is it that you, if I go in to support your environment, I have to do discovery first because I don't know what you do and what you did. That's why we have the wrap as a service environment that effectively scans your environment and writes a report that a human being, until very recently, had to read and think, ah, this is what they did, and here's the recommendation of what to do moving forward. The goal is to get to really standardized, simplified support environments that will tell you if you stay within this bracket, you are automatically supported. And that's a statement that we're going to also build into the PLAs. So that if you stay here, we will effectively support you automatically. We are going to go the next step down the road. I don't know if you've heard about the desired state configuration management in Windows Server 2012 R2. God, what a name. I will refer to it now R2 when I refer to that as Windows Server 2012 R2. In R2, the Windows team has now improved upon a forgotten capability called desired configuration management in Config Manager, if you've ever remembered that thing, and now effectively allow you to use XML and PowerShell and other things to design, validate the configuration of a given artifact. So if you have a component or a service or other thing, you can effectively have the desired state configuration system monitor it continuously and saying, wait a second, something changed. The operator, in best intentions, turned on a flag that wasn't supposed to be turned on. And it can do two things. It can report back and saying, hey, somebody screwed with the system, is that okay? Or it can actually revert the change and saying, no. The desired state says this is the way and you change it. Let me give you a reason why this is really important. 70% of the critical situations we are currently managing as Microsoft support in SharePoint are misconfigurations of the front end. Some human being clicked the setup and didn't do it consistently across his front ends. And because it is whacked out of shape, the system behaves badly, and our support people have to do a discovery before they know, okay, what's going on. So thinking through a reference architecture that's monitored by a desired state configuration system will alleviate some of that pain pretty dramatically. I won't read through all of this because part of this is a little bit marketing in terms of what it all does, but think of the PLA environment as the solution to some of the questions we asked before, meaning, for example, islands of best practice. This is configuration best practice that will be provided by product group, services, and support from Microsoft. The PLA is not owned by the services organization in terms of ownership of what it is, what the rules are. The rules are actually owned by the product team. So SharePoint rules are owned by the SharePoint team. The Exchange rules are owned by the SharePoint team. Ownership in this case means they stamp it. We do the work because they are busy working on their products, but they effectively say, yes, you got it right, and they sign off on these various configurations. So we know that the configuration that we push out here works. And that's something that we believe is fairly important in today's world, where you guys are being squeezed to get more money out of the system or and spend less on stuff. And deployed right the first time, reduce time to deployment, you can really focus on this is the service I want, and now let's get it done. Just to put it in context, from an all-up perspective, Office 365 at this point in time provides you with the tightest set of services and features and is what we call standardized. Now the PLA structures this and goes a little bit beyond what Office 365 offers because of some of the capabilities that we require on premise. Then there are recommended practices and then there are still custom designs. We don't believe that custom designs will go away. We don't believe that recommended practices will go away. But I personally believe that any customer that wants to deploy fresh with SharePoint Exchange Link should start here, ideally here, of course, but start here and then customize into this land. Let me give you an example that we're currently working on. Office 365 in SharePoint doesn't support internet sites because the business model of Office 365 is based on users. Known users. Those users are licensed. If you have an internet site with anonymous users, could be expensive to provide that on Office 365 at this point in time. So the internet site design, which SharePoint is perfectly and very good at handling, isn't supported by Office 365. And currently, it's also not supported by the on-premise PLA. But we are working on an extension to the PLA to effectively support the internet-facing website scenario because it is an important scenario. So that's one of the things that we are going to do as services to extend this. But you can effectively take this design and extend it instead of saying, this doesn't work for me, let's start from scratch. So this might be 80%, 70% of what you need, and the 30% might be still custom kind of design. So don't do the XOR thing, please, when you talk with your application people. Now, good. We have a standardized architecture for the software we want to deploy. And don't let anybody fool you. Without a standardized architecture, this automation stuff doesn't work. Because there are too many variations, and effectively you would have to design your standard architecture and then build the integration against it. That's it. There is no way that you can build automation, whatever fancy technologies we will give you, that's repeatable if there is not a standard architecture. Can't do. And that's certainly something that is a hard message for lots of people who are used to bells and whistles, and sure, we can do that. It's just software. But when you try and automate, you've got to reduce the flexibility and variability and say, no, 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 this is the way it works. If you use our PLA approach or not, it doesn't really matter, because at the end of the day, you will come up with an architecture that you then automate. So that's a very important piece. And we, from a CloudPak perspective, depend on the PLA artifact and the way it works in terms of what are the tiers, what are the various layers, and what are the componentry, how does the componentry get deployed, so that we can effectively make assumptions that the PLA is being used when you automate the deployment. Very important little disclaimer here, because, for example, Exchange 15 or 2013 went to a brick architecture. So they now actually, they used to have multi-tiers, and they now went back to a single tier. They componentized the solution further inside a single machine, but they now recommend that you deploy all of Exchange into a single tier, into a single box. Again, the PLA reflects that. If you say, no, I want it multi-tier, then our automation approach doesn't work because it assumes that you're following that architecture. So what does it mean? Effectively, we are working and providing you with artifacts from System Center to Windows Server artifacts. And when I say Windows Server, it's really PowerShell scripts that drive effectively the deployment and provisioning of the various server solutions. The cloud integration framework is another asset that we built as services, but that comes with the delivery of a cloud pack to you, which effectively says, this private cloud stuff, I read a lot about elasticity, I read a lot about this and that and the other, but I really can't find an engineering handbook of what to do. When do I use VMM? Do I have to use it? Do I use this, that, and the other? And how? What's the combination of all that stuff? And so the cloud integration framework is effectively a rule book that says, if you're thinking about private cloud engineering and deploying server workloads, you've got to think about provisioning. You've got to think about monitoring. You've got to think about integration, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then it spells out what that means, what the scope of each of those is, and says, hey, let's deploy provisioning for now. And then let's add monitoring to it and so forth. Because despite all your wishes, you might not be ready for all of what the private cloud might desire. Like, do you have a self-service portal? Maybe you do, but it only does VMMs today. VMs today. Can you really deploy a SharePoint site or an Exchange mailbox using the same portal? With Catal, you have the framework, Windows Azure Pack, if you haven't seen that one, but it's not necessarily geared yet towards higher level artifacts than a VM. So it has built-in VM capability, but you need to think about how do I want to organizationally provision? Who should be able to provision a mailbox? Is that everybody? Or a SharePoint site, and so forth. So think about the cloud integration framework as a blueprint of what it means to really integrate a server workload into your private cloud. And it's an engineering rule book, not some marketing stuff, meaning elasticity and self-service doesn't really do anything until you double-click and saying, oh, this is what this means. And what we're aiming for is parallel deployment and scale-out fully automated, so that you effectively can deploy as many artifacts as there are parallelly deployable. There are certain dependencies. For example, SharePoint cannot go active, really, until SQL Server has been provisioned and a database has been provisioned. Or if you are setting up a new Active Directory, if you're a hosting provider, the Active Directory has to be there before Exchange can be deployed, and stuff like that. And one of the things that we're currently working on is a hosting provider approach that can be used for the enterprise as well. So one of the reasons why we prioritize provisioning of a new service, SharePoint Exchange Link, is effectively because of the hosting guys. They are screaming their heads off. They want a solution to deploy SharePoint Exchange and so forth fast for new customers with effectively zero cost. And currently, we're building our own self-service portal where we effectively manage a certain set of artifacts from System Center. For example, we have an enhanced service template which uses the service template in Virtual Machine Manager. Everybody know what that is? The System Center team has work to do. The System Center team, since VMM, forget which version, but certainly in the latest version, supports a technology called service templates. A service template is effectively a way for you to describe the architecture of a service. meaning what web front end tier, middle tier, database tier, and you can show graphically what the connections are. And the idea has been taken from something that we've advocated a long time ago called SDM, the system definition models. Remember those guys? And we effectively now finally have the capability of doing it. And Windows Azure uses a similar model to deploy their software. And service templates can be used to configure the topology, meaning deploy VMs, integrate the VMs automatically with the network load balancer. There are various kinds that we support. And it also is able to provision storage. So the service template is a very core building block that is worth investigating. Let me put the caution brake on that thing as well, because if you read the marketing slides, that thing will solve all of your problems. But built-in support is only for .NET applications and SQL Server. If you only have those, good. If your apps are simple, also okay. But if you have complex applications like SharePoint, we effectively, as our approach, we use the service template to lay down the virtual machines, configure the load balancer, do all that stuff, VIPs and all these other good things in the IP space. And then we lift out of the service template and use orchestration in PowerShell to configure the SharePointness of the VMs or the exchangeness of the exchange VMs. Because the VMM guys, with best intentions, built very, very simple extension mechanisms into this solution. And one of the other problems we have is that the VMM, at least in 2012, every time you change a configuration variable, it versions. And then all of a sudden you have N versions because some app guy reconfigured his or her application. So use the service template for provisioning the topology, integrating with your infrastructure, load balancing, storage, and VMs, and then lift out of it and run a second phase, is what I call it, to configure the application. That's the way we do this in the cloud packs that we are shipping. That's why we are calling it enhanced service templates, because we have this two-phase deployment design. And effectively, we are also creating a provisioning system that manages and looks at it. So we are using Orchestrator, and we're using PowerShell underneath. Another artifact that you're going to get with an MCS engagement and the cloud integration framework is a runbook automation architecture. So everybody know what a runbook is, of course. So it's an automation framework. And every customer I know, and I know that I have the same desire, says, I would love to build a community of people that contribute their runbooks. So that if I find it in my library, I don't have to do it, I have to write it again. Everybody has that dream. Love it. Problem is, without a runbook architecture, you will guarantee that the runbooks will overlap, they will possibly overwrite each other, and so forth. And so you will get one of those runbook architecture designs. How do you do that, and how did we do it effectively with the delivery? And it's simple questions like, when do you use Orchestrator and when do you use PowerShell? What is the right mix? Because neither is the answer, the combination is, but what do you use when? Is PowerShell your workflow engine because now it can? Or is orchestration your workflow engine? And there's a lot of these kind of decisions that are being have to be made, and the Runbook Automation Architecture book does that for you. Again, extensible automation framework for deployment, management, and so forth. So the Cloud Pak will come with software, meaning you can open source it, or it is open source from our side, and you can extend it and so forth. Again, we are using the PLAs, our PLAs, to provide you with enterprise-grade deployment based upon Office 365 and our own experiences. Complete control of governance, security, and compliance as much as we can. We are configuring the system. We are logging it. We're auditing it so that anything that you do is being audited as part of, for example, the automation framework. And we have a logging set of PowerShell scripts that log in a consistent way and saying, this job got kickstarted by Uli at 3 a.m. on Sunday morning, and it logs all that stuff. And so those are some of the things that we are building into our runbooks. And this is an important one. If you download from the Virtual Machine Manager gallery the cloud pack that they offer. Very nice work. It is unsupported. The cloud pack is effectively here as an example of how you use the virtual machine manager technology, and thank you. If you wanted updates or any patches, or we ship SharePoint 2014, sorry, we don't do that. I'm also not in the product business, so I don't offer automatic updates and all these other things, 10-year support and stuff like that, like we do with a normal product, but I do offer maintenance and support, meaning if you sign a support agreement, and I don't know what the cost model is yet, but effectively we will offer one, we will effectively pick up the phone and saying, I have a problem with this runbook artifact, or this SharePoint Cloud Pack doesn't work, and there will be people that help you. Because if you use the out-of-the-box or in the gallery, people will pick up the phone, but they will only be able to answer the question, VMM doesn't work this way. They don't know anything about the SharePoint artifacts because it's not an integrated effort. And so that's currently, I would say, not optimal, but at least there is an option for you to get support and serviceability in terms of update, patching, and so forth. So when you look at the Cloud Pack, you get product line architecture. The solution alignment workshop is an engagement approach where you effectively get asked these questions. Remember the little menu where you say, okay, which choices would you like? And we will then say, yep, based upon this, we will effectively automatically create the farm for you. We are working on providing you a service that does that, effectively create the farm that you can then download from the internet, where you can say, yep, I don't need to even create the farm myself. No running of setup.exe in my data centers. Infrastructure design and configuration if you want it. So this is the IIS PLA that I mentioned before, the fabric design, fabric management, which is something that we offer as well as a PLA. And the application architectures are aligned with the PLA architecture here. That does not mean that if you have a VMware-based deployment or you already have an existing hypervisor, Hyper-V deployment, that it doesn't work. It's just that we have optimized it based upon this end-to-end architecture. You also get a portal. We are looking into replacing this custom thing with Catal, which is the Windows Azure Pack portal that the Windows product team is now going to use for moving forward for IIS and IIS website management. And we are looking into what it takes to move to Catal. Are there any blockers for us doing that? So if you haven't looked at the Windows Azure Pack, which is the unfortunate name of the Windows Azure technologies that are being made available on Windows Server, that contains the self-service portal. It contains Windows Azure websites, the service bus, and yeah, that's it, those three today. But our commitment to giving you the Azure technology as much as feasible is being manifested in this Azure pack at this point in time. You get provisioning runbooks today. We are also working on operations so that you get enhanced SCOM packs. So the SCOM pack that you get from a product team is effectively the superset of all possible options. And what we are doing, you could argue there's not enough in there, but if you deploy all of it and turn it all on, it will create a lot of information. And so the SCOM packs is effectively what we're doing is a configuration of what we have learned to be the most common things that you ought to monitor. And that's another piece of work that we're currently pushing against the service design. But the first release will ship provisioning runbooks, the enhanced service template that I mentioned before, and then we will work on operations and scalability runbooks as phase 1.5, let's call it that, so that you can deploy scale units automatically. We talked about those before, so that you can say, okay, I want to start with a small one, and then I want to add one, and so forth. One last note on this good old scale units. You've heard about data center fragmentation already? Nope. So think about the world of scale units or elasticity. You are going to shrink and grow and so forth, making an assumption that everything is going to shrink and grow in some predictable fashion, that you can have always room in, let's say, a set of racks that you have designed for Exchange, let's say, and all of a sudden you put Exchange in there, SharePoint and Link into two or three racks, let's say, and they all grew, and now you're out of room. What are you going to do? Can you shrink SharePoint? Okay, great. Then Exchange can have more resources to grow. But if you can't, because the demand is there for all of the services, you got to grow another rack. Okay, if that's feasible, good. But at some point in time, you're going to reach the limits of your load balancer and your router, whatever the artifact is that will constrain you, and saying, ooh, now I need to set up a different network realm, and now I need to move a service over there because it has no room anymore. And so scale units are great, but you have to think about them as part of the data center management approach. If you haven't listened to Mark Rusinovich and his Windows Azure Fabric Controller talk, the Fabric Controller that we have built for Windows Azure is precisely there to manage placement, scaling, elasticity, moving of things around, security, and all this other stuff. So it's a very complex piece of software that we wrote based upon the Windows Azure assumptions and design decisions. That's why we can't ship it in Windows Server, because it makes a ton of assumptions of how the data center works and how the provisioning works in terms of who do I tell that I need new hardware? How does that work? What's the provisioning process? What's my lead time? Do I need 6 days, 6 weeks, 8 months? What is it? Because it is not the same for every customer. I talked to some Middle East guys. They said it takes them 6 months to get racks into their data center, which is not an uncommon number. But if you have moving to scale units, you have to think about all of this stuff as part of your design. So elasticity is one of those where I wrote an internal blog article that I labeled Elasticity Godsend or Devil in Disguise. Because if you don't have the processes and the automation, it's really hard. If you don't have a lot of variability in your business or for these specific solutions, going careful with the scale units and maybe design them a little bit bigger is a sensible thing to think about. That's why we don't do exchange designs in our PLA or SharePoint that are below 5,000 mailboxes. Because 5,000 mailboxes is a reasonable number of virtual machines that you deploy. Again, some of you will say, well, but I don't have 5,000 users, okay? That's where the PLAs are sometimes complex. So the way Microsoft services engagement, this is a services engagement, not something that you can get out of the internet. We will talk to you about the PLA in much more detail. We do the solution alignment workshop, which effectively says, are the services that we will offer, Android services, archiving, or something like that, or for SharePoint, e-discovery, search, collaboration, those kind of things, is it that what you want? And then we will talk about how much do you need them, how many mailboxes do you need, how many SharePoint sites do you need, that kind of thing. How many documents will you create? So a lot of the discussions around how would you design a service. And then effectively we'll talk about the cloud pack and drive what's your current systems management environment. We make a hard dependency on System Center, 2012 and now going forward R2. We're not going to support System Center 2007, and if you're a Tivoli shop, we will tell you how it works, and we will give you the blueprint, and you can hire us to do all sorts of things for you, but it's not going to come as a pre-designed artifact. So we're not doing Tivoli or HP or any of the other partners that we are happy that they support our technologies, but as services, we're going to take a hard dependency on System Center in this case. Today, we're also taking a hard dependency on Hyper-V, but we're going to soften that one to allow to work on VMware, given System Center. So if you don't use System Center in your VMware environment, you've got to introduce it if you want the benefits of this approach. And again, I mentioned before, we will ship PLA blueprints independent of CloudPix. We ship Cloud Packs, and we also ship the blueprint for Cloud Packs. So you have the variability in your design and approach if you don't want to take a dependency on X or Y or Z. And again, in parallel, the blue stream is we look at your architecture in terms of your infrastructure. What do you have? How do you look? And so forth. The approach we take is resource pool based. Shouldn't be an issue because private clouds are supposedly resource pool based, but it's certainly something that we will look at. One of the cautions I also want to add to the people that think that a VM is the answer, what was your question? VMs are okay, they're a great building block and we love them, but today's environments tend to be medium environments, meaning you kind of do this, I think my applications will need this, and you will give them maybe a small, a medium, and a large VM. I don't know what your strategy is in your infrastructure. That might not be good enough. Exchange, for example, or SQL Server have a lot of requirements on IOPS. And if you starve that poor thing, the application performance will not be at the right level, and your users will hate your environment. And so you need to think about, when you're deploying the solution, what is the requirement that the app has before you put them onto a given resource pool? Lots of people say, yeah, sure, but I've seen so many infrastructure people that don't give a damn about their apps, saying, here's a VM, what's your problem, that it really gets into friction mode, where the application people say, I will not deploy into this private cloud thing, give me my own servers, because there I can control it, and there I'm not having to deal with this VM-ness, which is a good thing for enterprises, but only if the apps really work well. And so the performance, my view is, the app should drive the infrastructure and not the other way around. The app should not demand, hey, I want direct attached storage, and I want this and that and the other, but it should share the requirements with you, and you should be able to figure out how to put this out there. One of the suggestions we have is to think through possible multiple resource pools, not tens of thousands of mere resource pools or hundreds based upon each app, but give a specific app a resource pool if you think that it needs more performance and IOPS and whatnot, that you want to isolate to a given pool of applications rather than give it to all of them. I talked to a very famous insurance company, won't name the name, and they told me, look, we have effectively, what did they say, three enterprise-wide applications, SAP, SharePoint, and Exchange, and they were adding Link as the fourth. Those are enterprise-wide, and they need special treatment because the performance requirements are different. The rest is 20 user apps, single server apps, and all this other stuff. And so putting 80% of your solutions on the common, very cheap resource pool and the big applications on a specialized pool might actually be a doable approach for an enterprise. Again, I don't know your scenario, obviously, so think it through. And if you're a VDI fan, VDI needs its own resource pool because it has resource requirements that you don't want to put into every host in terms of remote FX and all this other good stuff. So resource pools are a great invention, love them, but you also have to think about, talk to the apps people, and maybe you're okay, maybe that works, maybe you need to do something special in order to isolate them. And again, the goal is to turn this into maximum, let's call it a four-week engagement, ideally two. I don't want this to be something that you will have month on end. We want a fixed price engagement, 2 weeks, ideally maybe four, and that's it. And then you have an up and running SharePoint, Exchange, and Link environment once we're done with all this work. And so that is the goal. You don't get to spend 6 months designing stuff. You actually design the solution, get it deployed, and off you go. And I want blinking lights with SharePoint or Exchange capability already available. Here are some of the screenshots that I promised. So here is our portal that does design effectively the various artifacts in terms of what are you required to run this thing. Some of you will see setup accounts, administrator accounts, primary Wifi server name. If it's a SharePoint artifact, it's a web front end, Wifi, and so forth. And then here is a visual representation of the resulting service template in VMM. So a service template here is the load balancer. Here you see the web front end tier, the various application tiers, and dependencies on storage. And so you can effectively use VMM to design that kind of thing by hand. We will ship one for you as part of a cloud pack that is pre-designed to support the PLA. If you don't like it, obviously you can change, but then you also have to adjust the orchestration runbooks and so forth. If you haven't really looked into VMM and templates, that's a very, very good thing to do. And here is then the resulting SharePoint environment. And the VMM solution actually does a really good job with load balancers. It does a very good job with storage as well. And of course, it manages virtual machines very well. So you really don't have to configure all this infrastructure anymore. And that's one of the architecture choices we made where, yeah, you can do all that with PowerShell. Not a problem. But with VMM, you get a capability built into its host group architecture. It understands how to remove VMMs and remove it from the load balancer. And they are also working on supporting fault domains and update domains. So you can design a fault domain. Everybody clear what that is? The fault domain concept comes from Hotmail as well, like the scale unit. And the Hotmail guys did a study of what is the most likely part in our data center environment to fail. And it was the mini switch on top of a rack. So we didn't double up the mini switch. And so we effectively designed the rack as our fault domain. That's a bit excessive for lots of customers, but that's currently what our fault domain looks like. You can design your own fault domains. And in Windows Azure, a fault domain is a bunch of racks. And when you deploy a multi-tiered environment, you can determine or you can tell Azure how many fault domains would you like. You can minimum two and maximum, I have no idea how many. And the fabric controller will automatically deploy VMs across the fault domains, making sure that it will make sure that you always have at least two VMs in two racks. So it does make sure that deploys correctly. And VMM has a similar logic built in. So it understands the rack architecture and how to place VMs based upon service templates. So if you haven't looked at VMM in that light, it actually has a couple of capabilities there. And if you remove a VM, it will automatically remove it, for example, from the storage as well as from the load balancer, which is another great feature set because it will also provide you with abstractions. So if you have F5 or Cisco or whatever, generally they have a provider into VMM so that it does take care of all of that stuff. As you know, that's not a simple feat because those things are powerful, but also fairly complex, let's call it that. And again, these are the runbook artifacts. I talked about this already, so it's an MCS-based maintenance feature. The rapid assessment I talked about as well, and again, as part of the Premier Proactive Services, we are also going to provide updates and so forth. Our goal is not to make money on this stuff in terms of, yep, we're going to get rich by providing cloud packs. Our approach is to give you a service which we have to be compensated for, at least for cost recovery person. I cannot afford to spend time and money as a services organization without seeing anything back. I don't get anything from the product teams. So they will sell you the license happily, but they will not maintain my costs. So this is a cost recovery operation, not a money-making operation. And again, we are working on the product teams to pick this up because I believe it should be a product thing, not something that we do. Their pushback, to a degree correct, is but only if we can guarantee the usage of the standard architecture. Because otherwise, we can give you examples and we can show you, but it requires human beings to adjust stuff. And so there is still work to be done of how far we can go with the standardization in real customer scenarios. The usual resources, again, I'm more than happy and interested, actually, in the dialogue, if any of you is interested. My email is my first name and .lastname@microsoft.com. So if you go in front of the first page of the presentation, you will find it. Happy to hear from you, and we have 6 minutes left, so I'm also happy to take any questions, conversation. And please provide your feedback about the session and what you think about the approach, because I think we're at the verge of finally where the data center people and the data center application people are talking to each other. And we have a common language that we're using, which is the virtualization language. And the technology is finally capable, like Server 2012 R2, to really support complex applications. Just to give you an example how complex things can get, talk to one of our SAP people. And she said, man, we got really ripped by our finance people because a batch job ran 20 minutes longer than normal. You kind of, okay, what's the big deal? Well, there's a certain timing, especially when you do payments, that's very important. You have to close the payments to get them into the banking system before a certain hour. And of course, the business waits to the last second, and you guys as IT have to guarantee SLAs, right? That's how that works. The reason why that thing ran 20 minutes slower was because the underlying hosts have power management enabled, and for some reason, the power manager decided to go into slow mode. So it didn't burn the CPU as hot as normal, and so it took 20 minutes longer. I don't know why the power management system didn't pick it up, that there was lots of activity and booted it back up, but that's what happened. And those are some of the things that we, when we look at private clouds and all this good stuff and virtualization and encapsulation, need to keep in consideration that there's certain quasi elements that the business through the app demands from the app and thus from you. So again, lots of interesting dialogue to be happen. If you don't have any questions, I wish you a great time in Madrid. It's awesome. And I certainly appreciate you listening and look forward to your feedback. Thank you.